We've had governors that haven't been committed to in the way that historically other governors have been. So, Mr. Kacheri and Ms. Raimondo are two people that don't have, they're very interested in things, but not with things related to people with disabilities, in my opinion. It's part of the culture. Rhode Island used to be a very, very special place that paid a lot of attention to I suppose things that were personally important to us. And so Rhode Island was distinctive in that regard. It was a place that, for example, we passed bond issues with more support than we gave for clean water, for people with disabilities. Well, nowhere else in the country was that going on. That was a function, I think, of the kind of leadership we had. And I'm not talking about myself. I'm talking about the our elected officials. I mean, Joe Garahey, Paul Sherlock, Dick Patterson, Rocco Quattrocchi. A lot of people didn't like Rocco. Thought he was too heavy-handed. Rocco was fantastic for our issues related to people with disabilities. Even Matty Smith, who didn't seem like he had a lot of policy sense, or thrust. He had a lot of control thrust, and Matty was good at that. But he had a soft spot in his heart. Those people just, they made a difference. They set the tone.
Absolutely.
They didn't go overboard, give everything away or anything, but they took care of the locals, of the people who were really down and out. Rhode Island has a tradition of that. We've been lucky, and we've lost that the last few terms. I mean, again, Kacheri didn't care at all. Yeah, absolutely. Raimondo, I don't even think she knows. I've actually met with her, and not recently, but when she was running first time, and afterwards, and I know a lot of those people. And all you have to do is look and see what they do at DCYF and at, the BHHH, whatever that thing is called.
Buddha,
Yeah, Buddha. Yeah. Those are not important priorities for him, and that's fine. It becomes important when the electorate thinks it's important. And things have been very good in Rhode Island for a long time. Things are still probably pretty good. But they're not like, we're not leading the way. We made horrible policy decisions under Mr. Kacheri. The lawsuit, the second lawsuit that they resolved with Justice Department, that ended up closing a lot of our facilities, a lot of our programs. I was involved with Justice. I was at that time and before that, an expert witness for all over the country for justice, for the Justice Department. Well, it's not for justice, but for the Justice Department. So I inspected like 30 some states and their community residences and their institutions, and I was involved in policy issues on such things as what do we do now that we've got all these settlements. This is the question under Obama. What do we do now that we've won all these lawsuits? Because we went all over the country and won lawsuit after lawsuit after lawsuit. I do want to talk about what the lawsuits meant for us in Rhode Island. What do we do now that there was no money? Because things were, Mr. Obama inherited such a horrific economy. And the states didn't have the money to meet their requirements, to meet their obligations. And I mean, they theoretically had the money. Obviously, we've got money for border walls, so we must have money for people, you know, theoretically. But anyway, they didn't know what to do. So the question was, how do we start imposing, imposing the federal standards all over the country? And what they really wanted to do was, what are you doing since Rhode Island's a leadership thing? Let's start here. And I counseled them, shows you how much they paid attention to me. I counseled them to just, kind of redo all the settlements and not, you can't make people bitter to help one group of people bitter to help another group of people. You've got to back it down and use some reason about it all. But this state didn't know how to respond. They had awful leadership. We're suffering over the last few years, probably the last 12. But they haven't destroyed the interest. You still see people with disabilities everywhere. You didn't used to do that.
No, they were all down in Exeter.
Well, actually, I wrote notes on things.
Yeah.
Only about 10% of the people with disability, with DD, were ever institutionalized.
Huh.
Most of them were at home. Worse. They were at home. First of all, you couldn't get into the LAD and those kinds of places without some pressure in the 70s and whatnot. Most of them were instead of being in an institution, which was awful, they were at home. They had nothing to do. They couldn't go to school. Paul Sherlock started special ed in Rhode Island. Paul Sherlock, just passed away a fairly short period of time ago.
Yeah.
They were hidden. We took people out of attics. We took people out of basements, out of bedrooms. We took people out of places that were in many ways worse than LAD could ever be. Not that they were being abused, but most people at LAD weren't being abused. The staff were actually a fairly honorable staff. They were a pretty good group of everyday kind of country folks, mostly, who weren't very well trained. I mean, the problem was that the politicians, until Joe Garrahy, were all very happy with the way things were going down there. Wasn't costing them any money. We're spending a couple dollars a day. Before 1973 or 4, they were spending a couple dollars a day to keep those people going down there.
Per person.
Per person.
Yeah.
They were doing all the work themselves. There was no hardly any staff, hardly any training. There were no professional staff. Very few. In a lot of those old timers were wonderful employees. They were great people. They cared about the folks. No one knew how many people there were because they were all hidden. And there'd never been any real careful survey of how many people with disabilities there really were in every community. And those old timers really believed that they were doing God's work by protecting, keeping them alive, if you will. And although we had some really difficult medical, dental, other kinds of issues in the 70s, and the journal. It's interesting the journal is doing this story. I'm happy that you're doing it. When Joe Garrahy hired me. And they hired me in 1978. When they hired me, they I remember Bob Ligori, the then director of administration, said to me, "Get the old man off the front page." I mean, that's what it was. Joe Gary's was a fundamentally decent human being, in my opinion.
No, he was. He was a good man.
Good person. Cared about people.
Yeah.
He'd walk through land. He could tell you who lived in which building and what the buildings were about and what they looked like and that kind of stuff. It was very interesting to work for a guy like that. Yeah. Now, Rhode Island's institution, Land Center, was not the worst in the country. As I told you, I did like 30-some states. And, I found lots and lots of really awful things, unnecessary deaths and injuries and, terrible, terrible situations. But we didn't, people in Rhode Island, they don't want to hear it. First of all, everyone knows everybody in Rhode Island. Used to. Not so much anymore.
Talk about Jim Healy. He played a very important role.
Huge role. Jimmy Healy was, I wrote some notes. I wrote down, great advocate, passionate, and unreasonable. Jimmy wasn't always right, but he always cared. One thing you can be certain of, if he wanted to push something, there was something worth pushing. He might not have the right solution, but he was impatient. He was everything a good advocate's supposed to be. Ryark was very, very lucky to have him. He had worked at Pauli Dever State School in Massachusetts for Annie Lewis, and he was as a young man. He was under the kind of the shirt tail of Paul Sherlock. Paul, and he talked every day of what to do. And Paul was also a staunch advocate.
I know.
And fairly unreasonable too, which, by the way, is their charm. There's no reason to be an advocate and be what? Gracious.
What motivated Jim Healy, do you think?
It
wasn't like George, who at least partly was motivated by Nancy, his daughter.
Yes, right.
But I don't think I ever asked Jim that.
Well, Jimmy worked at Pauli Dever.
And that's where.
That was unspeakable. You think Land Center was bad. Pauli Dever was unspeakable. It was unmentionable. It was the bottom of the barrel, or not quite, the second worst institution in the mass system. I worked the mass system too, in Belchertown. And
I went there. I was there many years ago when it was horrible. They were showering people en masse,
hosing them down. Absolutely.
Anyway, so Pauli Dever.
Jimmy was just, I think he was, his sense, he had a sense of outrage because if you're around people with disabilities, most of them, their humanity emerges. You've seen that. Mm. Jimmy just became captivated by the people, I think. I think he just cared. He gave a care about the people. He liked the people. Yeah.
And George Gunther.
George is, George definitely got connected, mostly because, of course, it was his first child. George was the president of RIARC. And for a few years, and George used to complain. George is a notorious complainer. If he doesn't like something, he'll tell you.
Yeah.
And George, as a head of RIARC, not as the staff, but as the president of RIARC.
Yeah.
He was up bitching, and the governor or one of his staff said, "Well, if you think it's so easy, you go down there and straighten it out." George said, "Well, I'll do that." And he went, and so they appointed him as the number two guy, the assistant superintendent. And he went down there working with John Smith. And to try and bring some business sense to it all. I mean, America is so infatuated with business that they'll elect people like Donald Trump who are, you know, are shyster businessmen.
Yeah.
But somehow it's part of the mythology of being an American. And so George said, well, I'll do it. George was in the insurance, he was Travelers Insurance. And he was a pretty successful...
He was a salesperson.
Yeah.
Salesman,
broker,
yeah.
Broker kind of stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think he was very successful as
an
insurance.
Yeah, he was. I remember that distinctly.
Yeah. But he went... So he said, okay, well, I'll do it for a couple of years. He said, it won't take me long to straighten it out. You know? Well, of course, once you get down there, taking a thing like Land Center and straightening it out is a pretty challenging thing to do. You got all the employees who are, you know, you're a new guy. Who the hell are you? You've got a superintendent who had inordinate power. I've been a superintendent. They used to be like sort of like the god of the plantation. Dr. Ladd, in his later years, had gotten a little, let's say, out of control. They, you know, a lot of corporal punishment, a lot of questionable, you know, kind of decisions. And so they dumped him.
Reporting played a role here, too.
Well, I think the reporting, I think the two things that made a difference in Ladd.
Yeah.
Reporting, and I would give the journal a ton of credit for that because the journal at the time used to be very, very important. I mean, nobody ever got up in the morning without going to the journal first.
So you said the journal gets some credit. You said two things.
The lawsuit from Jim. And that was Jim Healy.
Yeah.
That was Jimmy Healy. And the lawsuit, in 74, the Ritchie versus Greenblatt lawsuit was filed in Massachusetts. And Ben Ritchie was from Rhode Island. He was a Rhode Islander. He was a parent. He was a professor at UMass Amherst. And he and his wife filed federal suit on behalf of their son Robert, and that, you know, that comes back to Rhode Island because there's a connection with Rhode Island. And then in 78, John Isomone v. Garrahy was filed. There were two other huge, two three other huge things going on. The Alabama suit, which was before 74, and Willowbrook.
The famous one. Yeah,
yeah, in New York, Staten Island, Geraldo Rivera, Bernie Caraballo. Things were in. I was involved in most of those activities. Not Alabama. The lawsuit and the bad press, because it was bad press.
Oh yeah,
it was
really
horrible bad press. That's why Bob Ligori, the director of administration, said, you know, get the old man off the front page. And Joe Gary, what a guy to work for. Oh, my God. He was so wonderful. He's he actually cared about doing the right thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's very unusual.
No, I knew him. I actually wrote his obituary.
Did you?
Yeah.
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 I guess I remember
Nothing but good things to say. There was nothing but good to say.
Good person. Good guy.
Wait, get the old man. Who was the old man referring to? Ladd?
Well, no, getting Garrahy off.
Oh, got it.
He was the
governor. Okay, because he was governor. Yeah. Okay, got it.
They hired Joe Bevilacqua.
Yeah, right.
The director of MHRH. And Joe, I brought this up. Just that's this changing government policy. Joe's idea, a bunch of us wrote this, but Joe edited it. Joe's idea was A, do the right thing, but B, put people in the community. That's the right thing. You know, we can't have these hell holes. We can't have these places where we throw people away. You know, and Joe brought in Neil Meisler, Tom Romeo, you know, a bunch of people who weren't anything more special. All of us were committed people, professionals. But Joe had a distinct policy of we're going to change the way the world goes around in Rhode Island. That was, you know, not for the sake of doing it, but instead because it's the right thing to do. The people. Once you get connected with the people, the people with challenges, the parents and the families, you know, you just say, oh my God, these people have so many, you know, I don't know, they have so many issues involving them. They're just everyday human beings. I mean, I grew up with people with disabilities and not in my family, but friends of our family, that kind of stuff. And I saw what happened with them. I was working in Rhode Island at Rhode Island College when I went to Massachusetts. And started working at Belchertown as the deputy superintendent. I had no idea what these places were like. I'd never been in one of these places. And when I went up there and I saw what they did to people, oh my God, it just offended the hell out of me. You know, all these naked people, didn't make any sense to me. And probably I can still remember that entire, I could tell you almost every step of that day. And that was in 73 or 74. That offended me so much. I just said, you know, I'm not going to do this. We're not doing this. And so I went to the. And I was part of a team, three of us that had gotten our doctorates together. Went to Massachusetts and one of them as a regional commissioner, one of them as the superintendent. And then they recruited me, mostly because those two guys couldn't talk and I could talk to both of them, so it was very strange. But anyway, I was so offended, and it really called for us now to organize.
This was an affront to some core values that you had. The day, the last day, Lad.
Yep.
I remember that profoundly and clearly, and I think in the email I mentioned that it's my favorite quote ever, the beast is dead. But you also said Nazi Germany killed these people, and I forget what the rest of it was. I have it in my story. We took care of them, treated them with dignity, I think is.
Tried to.
Talk about that day. I mean, that was such an emotional day for me, and I was only writing about it. I wasn't right. A party.
You stayed overnight.
I lived there actually prior to that for a week.
Yep.
So it had meaning for me too, because finally, but that very last day, 25 years ago, March 25th.
Yeah.
Do you remember it clearly?
I remember it pretty clearly. It you know, in some regards, It was a signal event, you know. It was a meaningful day in that regard. But you know, we'd been on this long process. We were doing something nobody had ever done before. You know, nobody had ever set up a policy that said we're not going to institutionalize people. We're going to take care of everybody in the community. Nobody had ever tried to do that in the country, in the world, you know. Nazi Germany, when they had them, they killed them. It was a long drawn out process. There was never a particular goal. We never said as a goal we're going to, well, Dupree did, said we're going to close, but I never asked for him to do that. Yeah, I was glad he did. I liked Eddie Dupree. But I appreciated his support, because he was very supportive of me. But he and Healy were very close. So that made it, he and Healy were close, he and the unions were close. It was anticlimactic in some regards, because one of the things we did, we moved most of the very, very terribly disabled people out already.
Right.
And so we'd already, if you will, proven our point. Mm-hmm. Yeah. The point is, you didn't need one of these beasts. I knew it was going to happen. We knew where everybody lived. We knew where everybody was going. We had a commitment to the families to take care of people. And we had a commitment that we were bigger than just LAD, rather than just closing LAD, which is a negative thing. We were trying to, I don't know if the word is take care of, empower, provide supports for all people with disabilities, all people that at least that were developmentally disabled. Yeah, that's what we were trying to do. So that, for example, we could have closed LAD probably 5 years earlier if we just would have ignored all the people in the community, but we didn't do that. Most states did that. Most states made a formal decision. You know, you can't come into our system unless you go through our institution or unless you otherwise qualify for institutionalization. We didn't do that. But by the way, that's because of the politicians that we have. That's because of Joe Garrahy.
Yeah.
That's because of Paul Sherlock. That's because of Rocco Quattrocci. We started all kinds of things that nobody, while we were doing all this other stuff, we started a respite program. Nobody in America had a respite program. Rocco Quattrocci put that through at Jimmy Healy's behest. Jimmy and I actually went up and talked to him, and he put in a respite system so we could help people who were living at home. We could help those families. We put in a variety of community supports that nobody else was doing. Now they're all part of Medicaid, you know, federal policy, yeah, and that kind of stuff. But we invented all of it, you know. And I happened to be in a position to take advantage of starting all those things. I was as fortunate as all that. And it was so clear that, I think it was because of RIARC, all the RIARC connection. Remember, they used to have all those RIARC facilities. Most of them are still around. They really, served as a community focus. So Blackstone Valley, you know, you'd have the Blackstone Valley Center, or you'd have the Fogarty Center in Providence, or the Trudeau Center in Warwick, or the Maher Center in Newport, all these places all over the state. The local people had an affinity there. Even if they didn't know much what was going on, they knew there was.
Yeah.
Family, I mean, local friends or family would be attending, you know. They'd know somebody who had a kid at the Maher Center or whatever it might be. And I think that made a huge difference. So I remember the day very starkly. I mean, I remember late in the day, 4 or 5 o'clock, you know, everyone was out, everyone had moved. And the only thing I don't know if this is what I was thinking at the time, but I think I was thinking the only thing I cared about was to make sure that we didn't screw it up, and that we didn't lose somebody. That's what I was most worried about, to make sure that we knew where everybody was living that night, where everyone was sleeping that night, and where they were sleeping for the foreseeable future, so that we could monitor their progress and see how they're doing. One of the things you really worry about in running those kinds of programs is something called transfer trauma, where there's a huge percentage, maybe of elderly and very disabled people, maybe 20, maybe 30, maybe 40, as high as 50 or 60% of death, but people move. So it's
traumatic, stressful.
Yeah. And sure. By the way, you've probably moved a time or two.
Oh yeah, exactly.
And
it is stressful.
Yeah. And all of a sudden your friends aren't there and you're
Yeah, sure.
The staff. See, because the people with developmental disabilities relied a lot on the staff kind of modeling and staff oversight.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden they miss on that. So she really had to pay attention. And all over the country, I mean, again, those kinds of things I've inspected and stuff. People don't pay attention. They just think they're moving protoplasm. We were transitioning people. Very different.
This has been great.
Yeah.